For the ones finding new ways to ensure the job always gets done. For the ones wearing many hats. For the ones who are hands-on, even from far away. And the ones keeping business moving forward. We are Grainger, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, with 24/7 support and experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Is a paid program on 630 WLAP. This is the Tom Dupree Show on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome to the camp. I guess you all know why we're here. My name is Tommy, and I became aware this year. If you want to follow me, got to play pinball. And put in your earplugs, put on your eye shades, you know where to put the caulk. We're gonna take you.
We got winners. Got losers, chain smokers and boozers, and we got guppies, we got bikers, we've got thirsty hitchhikers, and the girls next door dress up like movie stars. I love this bar.
Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show for the second hour on this Derby Day edition. Joining us, Darsh Meshru, Philip Sexton, Mike Johnson, and our host, Tom Dupree.
All right, don't turn it down real quick, because this song tells a story. Kind of a Derby-type story, because people drink a lot, or used to at least, around the time of the Derby. And this is a song about how people drink and in what context.
I love this bar.
And it also reflects my feelings about our radio show. It's kind of like a bar. Everybody's bellied up to the bar getting ready to have a drink. So,
what are you talking about?
I'm just making an analogy.
Come as you
are. And it doesn't hurt that Toby Keith is one of my favorite characters. We're going to have him on the show at some point. Might help to turn your mic on.
You know, one thing I would say, it reminds me of this firm, too.
It's that way. That's kind of why I want to play it.
Yeah, we're the firm for the people that
don't have another place to go.
Exactly.
He's got.
Oh my gosh.
True.
We're inclusive, but they always have choices.
No, you know, sometimes they don't. All right. History tells you about post-pandemic booms. So we've been through this thing called a pandemic. It's a little bit like a war. It's kind of a wartime scenario, except the enemy is something you can't see, as opposed to being another person or persons. This is an article from The Economist, very highbrow. The cholera epidemic of the early 1830s hit France hard. It wiped out nearly 3% of Parisians in a month, and the hospitals were overwhelmed by patients whose ailments doctors could not explain. The end of the plague prompted an economic revival, with France following Britain into an industrial revolution. But as anyone who has read Les Miserables knows, the pandemic also contributed to another sort of revolution. The city's poor, hit hardest by the disease, fulminated against the rich who had fled to their country homes to avoid contagion. France saw political instability for years afterwards. So there seems to be an element of a pandemic that kind of puts further distance between haves and have-nots. It magnifies some of these economic and socioeconomic fault lines to the point that it's very galling for people who are kind of on the wrong side. I know, Adarsh, in India, I'm sure in the past we've seen things like that that exacerbate the divide between different castes in India.
Yes, there have been many situations. In fact, you know, as we speak, there's a big surge in COVID in India, and hospitals are completely overwhelmed. But throughout history, there have been various wars. There have been, pandemics. The Spanish flu in 1918-1919, that was extremely hard. Prior to that, there was cholera, there was smallpox. So, during times when there's upheaval or there's a situation where people need help, whether it be in the form of medical help or financial help, during those times, people who have the resources obviously, are able to, protect themselves better than people who don't. And this comes to the fore. People who don't have the resources realize that, there are people out there who, they're facing the same situation as us, but they are able to, protect themselves better. And why should we not be able to do the same? So, so when you look at, these pandemics, they talk about what happened in the 1830s when there was a cholera pandemic in France, and they mention Les Mis, Miserables, the book, which takes place during that time, and it goes into
Victor Hugo.
Yes, the tensions between the rich and the not so rich, and in the book, I remember at some point, there's a big there's a revolution that happens, and there's tremendous, backlash against the wealthy at that time, that results in a change in government in France. So these things are not unusual. What is very common during such periods is that as the pandemic recedes, there is, a pent-up demand which, comes forward. So people postpone consumption of various goods and services. Obviously, back in the 18th, 19th century, and if you go back to the Black Plague back in the 13th, 14th century, a lot of people just died. But today we live, in a world where, people are able to get help through, hospitals, and medicine has progressed significantly. So people are able to survive, at least the debt rates are not as high as they were 100 years ago. These people, their behavior seems to change, perhaps permanently. And the behaviors of societies change permanently, whether it be, societies becoming, here in this article, they give three examples. There are changes in the spending habits of people, which the assumption is that once the pandemic is over, people go go out. You know, they talk about the Roaring Twenties after the Spanish flu, or after World War II, you know, how people went out and spent. But they say that, yes, people do increase, you know, consumption or spend more, but it's quite gradual. It's not, you know, right away, because people are still cautious. Then there are technological changes, and people are willing to try new things or start new businesses because they are looking for a new way of doing things. Back in the day, people just left. A lot of people were dying, so people went and explored the new world. In France and in England, after the cholera epidemic, the Industrial Revolution happened back in the 1840s, 1850s. So it's interesting how, and thirdly, there's also political changes, you know, as we've seen in various countries. So,
but there are technological advances.
There are, yes. And it's out of necessity, you know. People are looking for a better way to do things because the old way, you know, seems to have not failed them really, but, you know.
Whenever there's a new technological breakthrough, there's always wealth creation that goes along with it.
Right. So, and you could say that that's, you know, as bad as things are on the ground, that's the silver lining, that, you know, people realize what's important. People have a perspective on, you know, how bad things can get. And this also happens after wars. You know, people who've already, who've fought wars, you know, are usually pacifist in the sense that they don't, they know how bad it can be, so they don't want to go and fight another war. So oftentimes when major wars happen, there are a few decades where no wars happen, and then the old generation dies, and then the new generation, perhaps, you know, not knowing how bad things can be, engages in war again. And, you know, I'm perhaps simplifying a little bit, but this is a defining moment, whether it be a pandemic or a war, for societies as a whole.
But, you know, it's interesting. Some of it's, you know, a lot of it's born out of necessity. But on the counter side, some of these studies, like coming out of the Spanish flu, a lot of people increased, they say, increased their expressions of risk-taking. That could be, you mentioned getting on a ship, going somewhere else. You know, that in and of itself is risky. It was born out of necessity, but that was risky. And so people would get more accustomed to various forms of risk-taking. And you're seeing some of that right now in a way, you know, with in the stock market, you know, with risk-taking. There's a lot of other factors involved, but you're coming out of this event, this pandemic event, and this is another way to express, you know, that increased risk appetite, if you will, from some people, and, you know, starting new ventures, new businesses, new way of doing things, that is in and of itself risky, but there's more of an appetite for that coming out of these things.
We were just at lunch around the corner, and we were talking to a guy that was in the brokerage business, and he said the bank that they're with is willing to loan money against security positions 50% at 1.75%.
Wow.
Now, let me tell you something. I don't care how much of a bull market you got, loaning against a security is always and will always be a semi-speculative type loan.
Yeah.
And when you're willing to do that for 1.75%, to me that tells me that everybody has kind of capitulated on the upside.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and another one thing I would ask too is you look at the history of pandemics and all this risk taking and things that have happened, but you know, I know that in earlier pandemics you didn't have central banks, you didn't have the fiscal policies like we do now. You know, so now you've put money into hands of people that otherwise didn't have the means to take certain risks. And so now you basically like, given a jet ski to somebody that can't swim in and of itself.
That's right.
You know, so you filled the market, and by market, I don't just mean stock market. I mean, just every kind of market. You filled the market with people that are undereducated or uneducated on a lot of
financial issues.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the housing market, you know, clearly, you know, right now that's hot. But it, my question, you know, to Tom's point on, you know, the bank, you know, these, you're not seeing underwriting on like mortgages. You're not seeing the excesses that you saw before the financial crisis, but you are seeing it on securities related things,
which is even more speculative.
Exactly. And that's worrisome, you know, because that's where you can have a localized event in one particular area that spreads through the entire economy.
Very much so, you know, and because in that scenario, you're not only loaning money against a security that's dropping in value, but then if you have to take hold of the security, it goes back to like homes and mortgages. You know, back in 2009, the bank took ownership of a lot of homes that
I had
valueless almost.
I had a loan in 2009 that was secured by my home, and the bank got me down there and took the home off the security. All they wanted was a loan on me in 2009. In other words, they didn't want collateral because they didn't want to explain to examiners how many loans they had collateralized by real estate. So they took my house off of it. They desecuritized their own loan.
I just got.
Why would you do that?
Well, and see another from a risk.
Not going to say which bank it was, but
I'm not going to.
You've heard of them.
Delve into the bank either, but I just finished refinancing my mortgage, and they upped the value of my home without an appraisal, by almost $30,000.
Oh well, were you going to go build an addition on it or something?
No. Just said we don't need an appraisal at this level.
Just looking at comps, goofy.
Which, you know, and at my age and you know the amount of down payment I have, I didn't have enough down payment to dodge PMI, private mortgage insurance. But
now tell everybody that that makes them think I'm working you for $8 an hour or something like that.
I mean it's $8.75, guys. Come on, but. No, but when you think about it, like, they basically just
told... They sound like a cheapskate.
They just told... No, they told the insurance company...
Or he bought too much house.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That's probably what it was. The insurance company that's in charge of that PMI,
better
you got to think...
Better refinance that sucker.
They you know, now they've got the bank telling them, yeah, the house is worth this. There's no appraisal. There's no underwriting. So this is trickling into other areas.
Stuff's getting goofy.
You know, into insurances, into other areas like that.
Leon Cooperman was on Squawk Box this morning, and
he's about 90, isn't he?
He's 78.
Oh, is that all?
But we were talking this morning. I mean, Leon Cooperman is a guy. If I had my choosings of someone to have dinner with, other than you, Tom, in this industry, it would be Leon Cooperman.
Why would you say that?
I was just throwing it out there just to be. But Leon Cooperman, I mean, he's kind of a Warren Buffett. The way that he takes all this information, and you know there's all of this research that's been done behind it, and he simplifies it down to just.
SEC was getting after it for something. I don't remember.
Yeah, it was
manipulation.
Manipulation like that. A few years back. But. He was talking about valuations currently in the market, and he was looking at the Nifty 50 stocks back and comparing what interest rates were at that time. You know, you're looking at treasuries in the 6% range back then, and they were trading at valuations 50, 60 times earnings kind of on average. And he was looking at, you know, the existing, if you want to call it big tech, the fangs, it was saying, you know, yes, things look expensive, but you know, he doesn't see that bubble that you saw back in the Nifty 50 with those types of companies, but he was seeing it in things that were people betting on the next Amazon coming up.
Yeah.
The small cap, the more speculative parts of the market are very frothy right now. And we're talking about all this to put caution into people's minds. You know, that is the contrarian thing right now. Caution is contrarian. You know, everything you see on social media, you know, most everything you hear in the news, it's all about taking risk. You know, did you see this stock or the cryptocurrency or the SPAC or all these things where it's just rocking and rolling, everybody's making money? That's all you hear about. You don't hear anybody stepping in and saying, let's be careful here, you know, and that's why we're talking about this. You know, the money that we manage for people, this isn't like, oh, I found this money, this is extra play money. This is, we work with people's life savings, and you have to manage the risk. And that's a huge part of what goes into this, is managing the risk, managing the emotions, managing the risk. And, you know, sometimes that's being contrarian, you know, when everybody else is scared, that's when you should get greedy. But right now, the general consensus is everything's great. Everything's going to keep moving.
Right. Elizabeth?
Am I supposed to do something?
Unless you've been living under a rock, you've probably been hearing a lot about the stock market lately. Millions of people are beginning to invest for the first time ever. And we're realizing that the financial system should be built to work for us. That's why Robinhood is creating real human education resources, truly digestible financial news, and a platform that lets you invest in your own way, on your own terms. The next generation of investors is already here, and it includes you. Robinhood. Investing is risky. Robinhood Financial, LLC.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Teasing. You all just cut out a little bit early. Here's this music you request, Tom. We're going to go to a break. You're listening to the Tom Dupree Show, powered by Dupree Financial Group, coming to Mars Studios on Main Street. I jumbled that a little bit. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Looking back now, when it comes down to facing the truth.
Somebody tell a joke.
Yeah, Tom jumped the gun this time. I didn't have to put the hook, but he did jump the gun. But we will be back in just a few minutes.
Without you.
Actually, to be exact, about 6 minutes.
That's my silver eagle. And my name up in light. And those big blue white diamonds, they can't keep me warm late at night.
Where people come to talk.
We got to stand up, and we're going to take our country back.
You are my inspiration.
News Radio 630, WLAP.
If you're wondering what's going on in the markets these days, you're not alone. It seems the conventional metrics of discerning value in markets has been thrown out the window. Perhaps it may help to look at interest rates, which are lower than ever. They are lower than in my dad's time in the business and in my granddad's time. Interest rates can justify valuations in the stock market, and lower interest rates can support higher valuations. So maybe things aren't that crazy. We talk about stuff like this at Dupree Financial Group. For a no-obligation review of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at 859-233-0400 or go to DupreeFinancial.com. And be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays from 7 to 9 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. That's Dupree Financial Group at 233-0400.
iHeartRadio is partnering with Global Citizen for Vax Live, the concert to reunite the world.
You'll see performances from Jennifer Lopez,
Eddie Vedder, Foo Fighters, J
Balvin, and me, her.
I'm Selena Gomez, and I'll be your host, along with some very special surprise guests.
Global Citizen's Vax Live, the concert to reunite the world.
Tune in to find out how you can win free tickets to the biggest sporting events in America. Saturday, May 8th at 8 p.m. Watch on ABC, CBS, and YouTube. And listen on iHeartRadio.
Creating lesson plans,
meeting with parents,
teaching after hours,
working over summer break,
adapting your classroom to be as safe as possible, or doing it all virtually.
Teachers, you've made every effort this year to put your students first. Now it's time to take care of you too. Roll up your sleeve, get vaccinated against COVID-19. Visit cdc.gov for more information. That's cdc.gov for more information.
Hey, Kentucky, it's time to reconnect. That's right, Connect, the name that brought affordable, quality health coverage to every Kentuckian, is back. And now there's more to the story. The new Connect is also your simple one-stop entry to a whole host of benefits and resources for you and your family. Like before, just go to connect.ky.gov to get started. A special health coverage enrollment period is now through August 15th. Like we said, it's time. Connect, together for a better Kentucky.
After a frosty start this morning, we are looking at a beautiful Derby day across the Commonwealth as we have plenty of sunshine, a few clouds mixed in, and temperatures going to be rising back into the 70s for this afternoon with some breezy winds at times. I'm WKYT, meteorologist Adam Bernstein.
Broadcasting live 24-7 from the heart of Big Blue Nation, this is News Radio 630 WLAP, an iHeartRadio station.
It's all about the nose. It's your air filter, the first line of defense against bacteria and viruses. If too many germs get stuck in your nose, guess what? You get sick. That's why it's so important to keep your nose clean, just like washing your hands. Nasal irrigation gets rid of germs by rinsing the nasal cavity, but neti pots are hard to use and, frankly, kind of gross. Now there's a better way to keep your nose clean and help your body protect itself. It's called Navage Nasal Care. Navage uses powered suction to flush out allergens, mucus, bacteria, and viruses. Millions use Navage for fast, all-natural relief from sinus congestion and allergies, and to breathe better, sleep deeper, snore less, and feel healthier without drugs. Navage is easy to use, affordable, and comes with an absolute guarantee of satisfaction. You wash your hands and brush your teeth every day. Now it's time to start cleaning your nose with Navage. At Navage.com, CVS, Walgreens, Bed Bath, Target, and Rite Aid. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E. Clean nose, healthy life.
Thinking about hiring a painter to do some work for your home or business, inside or outside? Because it is the time to start thinking about your home's exterior. Do what I did. Call Serta Pro Painters. This is Ryan Lemon, and we've just had the best luck with Serta Pro. Top-notch professionalism from the initial consultation to doing the job. It's completely worry-free with CertaPro. Schedule your free estimate at CertaPro.com. That's Serta with a C, by the way. And I love that each CertaPro painter's business is independently owned and operated. Call the pros at CertaPro and do it today.
630 WLAP.
You know.
I can't let you.
Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show for the second half of the second hour. Joining us, Darsh Meshru, Philip Sexton, Mike Johnson, and our host, Tom Dupree.
Kind of a horse motif. Obviously, they're not supposed to be wild horses because that would not be a very orderly race. But got the word horse in it. Okay. And that's obviously by Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones. So a lot of people don't know that they make music sort of like this too. A lot of people wouldn't immediately pick this as being the Stones.
Mm-mm, no. Yeah, it's just not what you'd normally associate.
Yeah. I remember when it came out. I'm that old. Okay, this is a Jason Zweig article. Zweig. How to keep your cool when markets are sizzling. He is incredibly good. He writes for the Wall Street Journal at sort of writing risk management type of articles.
Yeah.
You know, he's very... I don't know the word I'd use to describe him other than to say that he is kind of got a knee-jerk reaction to protect your capital rather than risk it.
Yeah.
So we frequently find ourselves dealing with an article of his because he writes well. He writes so that the average person could understand it, and thus we have this article. Buy low, sell high. Is any investing advice more universal or more universally ignored? That market axiom was made for times like these. When stocks are hovering near all-time highs, digital currencies are heading to the moon, and commodity prices are surging. Yet, when markets seem to be breaking records every day, your emotions naturally prompt you to buy high and not to sell. I got a little thing I want to say about that. I was with a very large brokerage firm, and in the mid to late 90s, we had a guy who was extremely well known on the street. I won't name him, but he was really a prognosticator. They called him a market strategist. Well, what he did was make stock picks, and he would put together a portfolio of stocks that he felt you should own. He called it the focus list. And if you were a broker at that firm, one thing that a lot of brokers did at that firm was create a managed account whereby your clients would buy his picks in a managed setting. And everybody would sort of hang on what this guy said to whether you ought to own this or not. And I remember there was this woman who was, I don't know what she was, but she was one of the big brokerage firms have hidden in their sort of bureaucracy people that make hundreds of thousands of dollars that you're not really sure what they do and where they or really what their role is. But I think she felt like it was her role to call brokers and be a cheerleader. And I remember hearing her, the stock she was pushing was, it's a software stock, and it's a software that would make all kinds of other softwares talk to each other, and I've forgotten the name of it, but it's a well-known company. And she would call, are you buying any of this? It's like, you know, she was almost like a strength coach. You know, are you doing your burpees? Are you taking probiotics? And are you buying this stock? And I said, honey, it's shot up 30%. Buy on strength. I remember her saying that. In other words, the fact that it had gone up 30% almost meant it was a better deal now than when it was at 30% lower. And I've seen that kind of insanity. I've lived through it. And I would argue that at the firm that I was with, when everything fell out of the bed, and starting in, was it April of 2000 when the market started to?
March.
Yeah. And then within the next 2 years, you know, some markets were down as much as 60%. And I would argue that that's what caused that firm I was with to merge with the bigger firm out of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they and these people didn't seem all that concerned about sort of putting the whole weight of the firm on these potentially speculative picks. And I think it gets down to the fact that it's not their money. It's not their own money. You know, wonder what was in their portfolio. Probably a lot of cash, you know, but No, it's the client's money. And so that's why I'm no longer at that place, nor have been for, you know, 20 years, but it just, it was interesting.
Yeah.
The psychology.
Right.
Whenever it's somebody else's money, it's a lot easier to risk it.
Right. Yeah. And one of the points that Zweig is making here is it's harder to sell a lot of times than it is to buy, because you're seeing all this speculation is, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, just all the brouhaha around these stocks. And if you sell and it keeps going up, well, you look like an idiot.
You're an idiot.
And that's from a money manager standpoint, an investment manager, that's a real risk. You know, if you're a fund manager or a hedge fund, that is a real, that's career risk for those guys.
Right.
We are not that. You know, we are managing.
Hey, how many credit cards are in your wallet? The only card you need is the UK Federal Credit Union Visa Platinum Card, which offers rates as low as 7.24% APR. When unexpected expenses arise, you need a credit card with options, like the UK Federal Credit Union Visa Platinum Card with no annual fee and no balance transfer fee. Annual percentage rates apply, member qualifications apply, but the rate is variable and it applies to Visa or Platinum Card, subject to credit approval and subject to change. For full disclosures, visit ukfcu.org, federally insured by NCUA.
People's portfolio. You know, our job is to try to mitigate that risk and to, you know, stay diligent. It's not to, you know, be in the top 1% all the time. It's to manage risk. But you know, behavioral finance, it's fascinating. You know, you look at that versus, you know, efficient markets and all that. It's fascinating how the psychology plays into these things. And that's what Zweig is hitting on here. And he gives a great example. And I think this is a good conversation for us. Imagine that you have a security and the company is cheap at price A, and it's overvalued at price C. So, you know, ideally, what do? You buy at A and you sell at C. But the hard part of investing is that stocks hang around what they refer to as price B, somewhere in the middle. And the more you know about a company or a sector or, you know, historical perspectives on markets, the more information you have and that you can get in your mind what you think it's actually worth, that price B, which is in between, that's the unknown area. That's when it's hard to buy or hard to sell. That area becomes narrower the more information you have. And what we try to do is, if it's an individual stock, you know, learn as much as we can about that company or that business to hopefully narrow that spread between the A and the C. And what that does, it takes some of the uncertainty out of it. And it's being disciplined and diligent. We just did this with one of our holdings in particular that we've owned for a long time. Amazing company, amazing management. It's done extremely well. And it's been, you know, has been and still is, you know, moving up. We took some off the table. We sold some of it. Why? Not because we think anything's wrong with the company, but it's risk management. You know, we took some of that profit from that one particular holding and then dispersed it to other areas that either we see opportunity or you move it to the
side. We shouldn't have done that.
And I think people, to this article and to what you were saying, like, people tend to build a level that they gain comfort over time. So as that stock hangs out at that price B, as you said, or as you're used to a certain thing in your life, you build a level of comfort around it where the perceived or the actual risk is this, but your perceived risk continues to decline over time. And then the other thing is people also build in a false sense of control where they're looking at a portfolio and they're like, oh yeah, you know, I can do this or I can do that, you know, and that'll negate all these risks. It's the same, the way I like to describe it from an analogous perspective is like when you are in a car and you're driving it and you're going 100 miles an hour, but you're behind the wheel and you're not wearing a seatbelt because you're saying, oh, I control this car. But if you got into a vehicle that was going 100 miles an hour and you're sitting in the passenger seat, you're automatically reaching for that seatbelt. And I'm sure everybody out here has had that feeling where they're like, oh, crap, I better buckle up.
Well, along the same lines, if you're in a car going 100 miles an hour, the first 5 minutes that you're going 100 miles an hour, you feel like you're going 100 miles an hour. 15 minutes in, feel like you're going 70 40. Miles an hour.
Yeah.
More, the longer you stay there, it normalizes.
Depends on the car, too.
Yeah.
If your car is built to take that kind of
speed. But your risk, you get used to it. And so it normalizes, and that's what you're seeing. I think right now you're seeing people not being aware of the risks that they're taking right now.
Oh, they have no idea.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And I think, too, to explain the decision-making and really how everyone should approach decision-making, and I'm going to use something, a conversation that I had with Adarsh a long, long time ago. It's always stuck with me. He was like, you know, when I'm picking an investment, I always have to ask myself, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, and you have to bake that in to everything, you know, because we sold a stock and it continued to move up.
Adarsh says, I don't remember saying that.
but the question you have to ask yourself is if you make this decision, the worst thing that can happen is it continues to move up. If you don't make the decision to take some gains and de-risk, the worst thing that could happen is it flips and it goes down 50%.
Well, the other thing, it's how bad do I have to have alpha? You know,
yeah.
How bad do I need it? I mean, do I need it that bad? You know, the answer is we try to kind of manage money in such a way that people don't feel like they're backed into having to have, you know. Our deal is not set up that we don't get paid our big ass fee if we don't have a 30% gain to take 20% of. You know, we're not aligned that way, which can make us a little too complacent at times, but we have to, you know, figure out how to get some alpha without betting the ranch on it.
Yeah. Right.
I mean,
and just to clarify, we don't have a big ass fee.
No, we're not a hedge fund.
Exactly.
What I tried to say.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, it's when you're looking at something like that, you know, to that point where we don't have that huge fee.
A high watermark that if we don't, you know, get past that and make a lot of money that, you know, we're going to have to fold the tent kind of thing.
Yeah. And you when you look at how someone is incentivized towards their risk, our biggest risk is not keeping a client for a long period of time.
That's
because
right.
Because it makes more sense it financial sense for us as a firm that relationship has to last for a very long time, you know, and the only way that relationship lasts is investment performance along with communication.
I can't find anything better to invest in than companies. I mean, you can criticize them, whatever you want to do, but companies actually make things and make a profit. And, you know, real estate by itself doesn't make a profit unless there's a company that's managing it. You can buy hard assets. They are only worth what somebody will pay for them, you know, and currency's the same way. You know, Bitcoin is a contrivance. It's what it is. It's not a real thing, yet people treat it as if it's more real than gold.
That's true. Yes. And to me, it's amazing that, you know, it's done what it's done, given just the, you know, when you look at the history of currencies, any currency that, whether it be central bankers or governments don't control, you know, it doesn't take that long for them to, you know, shut it down. But Bitcoin is a different phenomenon altogether, and it's gained this momentum. But, you know, as you said, that companies, you know, ultimately are really, they are the best avenue to invest, because they are always in the process of, you know, generating, whether it be earnings or cash flow. And, you know, with something like Bitcoin or gold or whatever it may be, you know, they're stagnant. Gold is just a piece of rock, really, when it comes down to it. Whereas companies have people behind them, and these people are, you know, thinking of ways to, you know, do things better. And when you think about, you know, how people have made wealth, when you think about whether it be, you know, millionaires, billionaires, it's always been through owning a piece of a company. And it's also the way, you know, people who've saved their entire lives and have tried to improve their quality of life during retirement, they have also been able to, you know, invest in companies and generate either a source of income or keep their portfolio growing over time.
Right.
One thing I want to mention on this article, and I thought this was a really interesting behavioral quirk of people, and this was something they studied, and they stumbled upon it. The researcher was playing Legos with their son, and they were trying to build a bridge, and the bridge wasn't level. And she reached around to get a Lego to put in there, and during that time, the son had removed a Lego to make the bridge level. And they started studying this. Your natural inclination is to add something to try to better a position. Yeah. You know, be it, you know, you think of a portfolio of stocks, your natural inclination is to, what can I buy now? You know, so that's why we see a lot of portfolios, especially in an up market, where there's little pieces, almost kind of haphazard holdings inside the portfolio, because I want to buy this because it'll make it better. I want to buy this to make it better. I might buy this. And so it's this collection of almost kind of haphazard things. And when really you can better yourself or a portfolio by removing things that aren't needed in there. And it's the same thing from, you know, a cash flow analysis or a personal, you know, getting your budget in order. You know, it's not necessarily making more money. While everybody wants that, it's great. It can be removing things to get that cash flow in balance. So sometimes removing things is the easiest and best way to ride a ship, to get something level.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different way of thinking, and that's, you know, every time you add something to the equation, you're adding outside risks.
Right.
You know, to that point, Mike, and that's where a minimalist lifestyle can be something that you could definitely learn from, you know, in that.
Yeah, you could learn that, Mike.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Yeah, Mike, you're a hoarder.
That's true.
You got some problems.
As Philip laughs after he's revealed his whole mortgage situation during the show. But anyway, on that note, let's start a little music and wrap it up for this week. You've been listening to the Tom Dupree Show with the Darsh Meshru, Philip Sexton, Mike Johnson, and Tom Dupree. If you like what you've heard today, you can always find more of the Tom Dupree Show on our website, DupreeFinancial.com, under the blog and radio tab. We post our podcast following the live version of the show, and then all of the podcasts for I don't even know how long are housed there. We hope you've learned something today. We appreciate you listening, and have a great Derby Day. We'll talk to you next week.
Smarts in your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play News Radio 630 WLAP on iHeartRadio.
Hi, this is Tom Dupree. What actually makes a difference in life? Is it Bitcoin? Is it gold? Perhaps it's bonds, racehorses? No. Of any economic entity in which you can invest, the ones which actually make a difference are corporations. They are maligned, taxed, demonized, run by left-wing ideologues, but still, they must produce a profit. They cannot afford to invest in things the way that government does. Their investments must show a profit. Their investments must be productive. We believe our clients like to think their investments are being productive, both for society and for them. For a free review of your retirement investment portfolio, call Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays at 7 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Hey, how many credit cards are in your wallet? The only card you need is the UK Federal Credit Union Visa Platinum Card, which offers rates as low as 7.24% APR. When unexpected expenses arise, you need a credit card with options, like the UK Federal Credit Union Visa Platinum Card with no annual fee and no balance transfer fee. Annual percentage rates apply, member qualifications apply, but the rate is variable and it applies to Visa or Platinum Card, subject to credit approval and subject to change. For full disclosures, visit ukfcu.org, federally insured by NCUA.